Hello everyone, welcome back to my channel. Today I have with me for the fourth time, I'm still counting, a very, very special guest, one of the best professor in economics and financial analysts in the world. And I'm very glad we are reconnecting with Professor Hudson again. I want to start this live stream with asking all of you to check all my links down below this live stream, because being on other platforms, especially nowadays, is very important. So you have my locals there, you have mailing lists, and every other link if you choose to support my work as well. Also, Professor Hudson's three links. You have website, Patreon, and all the books that Professor Hudson has published so far you can order. It's all the way down below this live stream. I'm sure this video will bring you an immense value, and I would like you to hit this like, because it helps other people to see it, since YouTube recommends videos with a lot of likes. Leave the comments and also share the video, because the knowledge that you will be hearing today, it's priceless. Welcome back, Professor Hudson. Thank you so much for joining me today for this conversation.
Thanks for having me back again.
And I would like to say to the audience as well that this video is dedicated to what is taking place, especially in Gaza and Israel. Of course, we will address other countries related to this situation. But Professor Hudson has sent me a very in-depth email after our last live stream a week ago, also on Friday. And we actually decided, after we ended that live stream, to have this particular topic to be the main topic of this video. So I give this to you, Professor Hudson. Where would you like to start this conversation, please?
I think I should start with my own background, because 50 years ago, in 1974, I was working with the Hudson Institute with Herman Kahn, and my colleagues there were a number of Mossad agents who were being trained. Uzi Arad was there, and he became the head of Mossad and is currently the main advisor to Benjamin Netanyahu. So all of what is happening today was discussed 50 years ago, not only with the Israelis, but with many of the U.S. Defense people, because I was with the Hudson Institute, which was a national security agency, because I'd written Super Imperialism, and I was a balance of payments expert, and the Defense Department used my book Super Imperialism not as an expose, but a how to do it book. And they brought me there as a specialist in the balance of payments. Herman brought me back and forth to the White House to meet with cabinet members and to discuss the balance of payments. He also brought me to the War College and to the Air Force think tanks. So all of what is happening now was described a long time ago. And Herman was known as a futurist. He was Dr. Strangelove in the movie. That was all based for him on his theories of atomic war. But he was also the main theorist behind Vietnam. And nobody seems to have noticed that what is happening in Gaza and the West Bank now is all based on what was the U.S. strategy during the Vietnam War. And it was based on the strategic hamlets idea, the fact that you could cut back, you could just divide all of Vietnam into little parts, having guards at all the transition points from one part to another. Everything that Israel is doing to the Palestinians in Gaza and elsewhere throughout Israel was all pioneered in Herman in Vietnam. And Herman had me meet with some of the generals there to explain it. I think I mentioned I flew to Asia twice with Uzi Arad. We had a chance to know each other very much. And I could see that the intention from the very beginning was to get rid of the Palestinians, and indeed to use Israel as the basis for U.S. control of Near Eastern oil. That was the constant discussion of that from the American point of view. It was Israel as part of the oil. So Herman's analysis was on systems analysis. You define the overall aim, and then you work backward. How do you do it? Well, you can see what the Israeli policy is today. First of all, you isolate the Palestinians in strategic hamlets. That's what Gaza had already been turned into for the last 15 years. It's been carved up into districts with requiring electronic passes from one sector to another to go into Israel, to go to Jerusalem, and or to go to Israel for jobs to work. The aim all along has been to kill them. Or, first of all, to make life so unpleasant for them that they'll emigrate. That's the easy way. Why would anyone want to stay in Gaza when what's happening to them is what's happening today? You're going to leave. But if they don't leave, you're going to have to kill them. Ideally by bombing, because that minimizes the domestic casualties, and Israel doesn't want its soldiers to die any more than Americans do. So the American form of war is, as it was in Vietnam, is bombing them. You don't want person-to-person contact, because people fighting for their lives and liberty tend to be better fighters, because for them it's really essential. For the others, they're just doing soldiers' work. So the genocide that you're seeing today is an explicit policy, and that was a policy of the forefathers, the founders of Israel. The idea of a land without people was a land without Arabs in it, the land without non-Jewish people. That's really what it meant. They were to be driven out starting even before the official funding of Israel, the first Nakba, the Arab Holocaust. And the two of the Israeli prime ministers were members of the Stern Gang of terrorists. The terrorists became the rulers of Israel. They escaped from British jail and they joined to found Israel. So what you're seeing today is the final solution to this plan. And the founders of Israel were so obsessed with the Nazis, essentially, they wanted to do to them what they did to us, is how they explained it to people. For the United States, what they wanted was the oil reserves in the Middle East. And again and again, I heard the phrase, "You're our land and aircraft carrier in Israel." Uzi Arad, the future Mossad head, would be very uncomfortable at this, because he wanted Israel to be run by the Israelis, but they realized that for Israel to get by with the money that it needed for its balance of payments, it had to be in a partnership with the United States. So what you're seeing today isn't simply the work of one man, of Benjamin Netanyahu. It's the work of the team that President Biden has put together. It's the team of Jake Sullivan, the National Security Advisor, Blinken, and the whole deep state, the whole neocon group behind them, Victoria Nuland and everyone. They're all self-proclaimed Zionists. And they've gone over this plan for essentially America's domination of the Near East for decade after decade. But as the United States learned in the Vietnam War, populations protest, and the U.S. population protested against the Vietnam War. What the Biden administration wants to avoid is the situation that President Johnson had in 1968. Any hotel, any building that he went to give a speech for his re-election campaign, there were crowds shouting, "LBJ, LBJ, how many kids did you kill today?" President Johnson had to take the servants' entrance to get away from the press, so that nobody would see what he was doing. And essentially, that was he went on television and resigned. Well, to prevent this kind of embarrassment, and to prevent the embarrassment of journalists who were doing all this. Seymour Hersh described the Malay massacre, and that helped inflame the opposition to Johnson. Well, President Biden has approved Netanyahu's plan. The first people you have to kill are the journalists. If you're going to commit a genocide, you have to realize that you don't want the domestic U.S. population to, or the rest of the world, to oppose the U.S. and Israel. You kill the journalists. And apparently, for the last, ever since the October 2nd Al-Aqsa event, you've had one journalist per week killed in Israel. That's part of it. The other people you don't want, if you're going to bomb them, you have to start by bombing the hospitals and all of the key centers. That also was part of the idea of the Vietnam War. How do you destroy a population? This was all worked out in the 1970s when people were trying to use systems analysis to think, how do you work back and see what you need? The idea, if you bomb a population, you can't really hide that, even if you kill the journalists. How do you kill a population passively? So you minimize the visible bombing. Well, the line of least resistance is to starve them. And that's been the Jewish, the Israeli policy since 2008. You had a piece by Sarah Roy in the New York Review citing a cable from 2008 from Tel Aviv to the embassy saying, is part of their overall embargo plan against Gaza, Israeli officials have confirmed to the embassy officials on multiple occasions that they intend to keep the Gaza economy on the brink of collapse without quite pushing it over the edge. Well, now they're pushing it over the edge. Israel has been especially focusing after the journalists, after the hospitals. You bomb the greenhouses, you bomb the trees, you sink the fishing boats that have supplied food to the population. And then you aim at fighting the United Nations relief people. You've read, obviously, the whole news of the last week has been the attack on the seven food providers that were not Arabs. And this was, again, from a systems analyst point, this is exactly what the textbook says to do strategically. If you can make a very conspicuous bombing of aid people, then you will have other aid suppliers afraid to go. Because they think, well, if these people, aid suppliers, are just shot at, then we would be too. Well, the United States is fully behind this, and to help starve the Gazian people, Biden immediately, right after October 7th, withdrew all funding from the United Nations relief agencies. The idea, again, was the hope was to prevent the United Nations from having the money to supply food. So when the United States is now trying to blame one person and Biden goes on a television recorded call with Netanyahu saying, please be humane when you're dropping your bombs. Do it in a humane way. That's purely for domestic consumption. It's amazing how nakedly hypocritical all this. And ever since the Al-Aqsa flood was raided, including Hamas's leading to Hamas's retaliation on October 7th, it was closely coordinated with the Biden administration. All the bombs have been dropped day after day, week after week, with the whole of the U.S. And Biden has said on a number of occasions the Palestinians are enemies. So I think I want to make it clear that this is not simply an Israeli war against Hamas. It's an American-backed Israeli war. Each of them have their own objectives. Israel's objective is to have a land without non-Jewish population. And America's idea, aim is to have Israel acting as the local coordinator, as it has been coordinating the work with ISIS and the ISIS commanders to turn them against targets provided by the United States. Basically, that's the duopoly that's been created. And I think Alistair Crook has cited Trita Parsi, was one of the Israeli political leaders, saying the objective really in all this of Israel's conflict and Biden's acquiescence to it is that Israel is engaged in a deliberate and systematic effort to destroy existing laws and norms about warfare. And that's really it. You have people, you have reporters such as Pepe Escobar saying that the United States is a chaos agent. But there's a logic in this. When you have the United States is looking forward to what it's going to be doing in the Near East, in Ukraine, and especially in the China Sea and Taiwan. Looking forward, the United States says, how do we prevent other nations moving against us in the international court or suing or somehow bringing, putting sanctions against us? Israel is the test case, not simply for what's happening there in Israel and Palestine itself, but against anything that the United States will be doing through the rest of the world. That's why the U.S. ambassador to the UN, echoed by Blinken and other U.S. officials, said there's the court of, there's no court of justice ruling against genocide, that it was a non-binding ruling. Well, of course it was binding, but it has no means of enforcement. Both Blinken and yesterday the head of the army said there is no genocide taking place in Gaza. Well, what that means is you have to go to a court, and that's going to take years and years. And by the time the court case is over and there's any judgment of reparations due, then you're going to, by then the Gazaans will all be being dead. So the U.S. aim is to end the rule of international law that is why the United Nations was founded in 1945. And in fact, this international law goes way back to 1648 with the Peace of Westphalia in Germany to end the 30 Years' War. All the European nations agreed not to interfere with the internal affairs of other countries. Well, that also was part of the United Nations principle, and yet you have the United States explicitly advocating regime change in other countries, in most specifically in Russia and throughout the Middle East. So if you can end the whole kind of rule of law, then there's really no alternative to the United States rules-based order, which means we can do whatever we want, chaos. And if you look at what's happening in Gaza, is facilitating a transition from an orderly world of the United Nations to chaos, then you're going to understand basically what the whole the big picture, the long range picture that's been put in place really over a series of decades. That's why the United States has no plan B. It only has the plan A to do this. It's not taking into account the counter reactions and the feedback. Maybe we can discuss that later. I better leave the questions up to you.
Thank you. You actually have already answered many of my questions in that intro. But I want to ask you this now. I will jump a little bit now. I have a question about something that you wrote to me in your email. I believe, looking at many, many situations that are taking place in the world, that sometimes all you really need to do is to follow the money, and it will give you a lot of answers. So as you said in your email that, let me check, where is it? The Israeli developers already are planning to turn Gaza into luxury beachfront properties. So let me ask you here, Professor Hudson, what is really the main goal for Israel's existence? And in this case, is this really about the luxurious properties, oil? What else is this region really about? Why is it so crucial?
Well, it's not just about beachfront properties. It's what's off the beach, the gas, the natural gas that they've discovered right offshore of the Mediterranean that belongs to Gaza. So the Israelis are after the gas. But your basic question, you'd sent me a list of questions you were going to go through. And I think if you keep to that sequence, it's good. What you're really asking is, what's the main goal for Israel's existence? And I think if people don't really, their sense of justice is so strong that they can't believe what the original goal was. And the initial goal in the 19th century was formed in a period where Europe was anti-Semitic. The most anti-Semitic part of all was Ukraine. If you read Leon Trotsky's autobiography of growing up in Odessa, he described the pogroms there. So the Zionists, the first wave of Zionists, were looking for how can the Jewish people escape from this anti-Semitism. Here's the problem. By 1947, when Israel was formed, anti-Semitism was passé. Most Jews in the United States, certainly who I grew up with, they were all assimilated. Of course, they had well wishes for Israel. There was very little talk of the Arabs, but you had two arms of Judaism. The one arm were the people who remembered with a vengeance what was done for them, against them in Ukraine and Russia, and especially by Hitler and the Holocaust. They wanted to be separate and to have the to be protected. But most of the Jewish population in America and Europe was thoroughly assimilated, and the last thing they wanted was to be separate. They wanted just the opposite. They wanted anti-Semitism to end. But the Zionists who were in charge of Israel, the Stern Gang leaders, were obsessed with the old antagonisms. In a way, they were obsessed with Nazism and said, well, we want to do to them what they did to us. And again, the idea of a land without a people meant a land, we intend to make Israel into a land without non-Jewish people. That's what a land without people, their slogan meant. And from the very beginning, they started by driving Arabs out of Palestine, destroying their olive trees, destroying their orchards, taking their houses, and just plain killing them. That's why the English threw them in jail before turning around and said, well, it's true that we've thrown all the leaders in jail, but let's recognize Israel and make Israel a whole country to do what these leaders that we were before throwing in jail were doing.
Thank you. You said also in your email that ISIS is part of America's Foreign Legion. Can you please elaborate on that?
Well, ISIS was organized originally to fight in Afghanistan against the Russians. And Al-Qaeda, which was the parent of ISIS, was simply the roster of people who were willing to fight under the U.S. command. Well, part of Al-Qaeda turned against America on 9/11, but most, especially the Sunni followers of Wahhabi theology, were very eager to fight against the Shiites. Islam is divided into two parts. The Sunni Islam of Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Republics, and much of the Near East, and the Shiites from Iran, and maybe half of Iraq, and parts of Syria also. So you had these two sectarians groups fighting each other, and the United States provided the funding and the organization to them, and essentially delegated to Israel much of the organization of organizing ISIS to fight against Assad, to fight against whomever the United States designated as our enemies, meaning we want to take their oil lands. As America has taken Iraqi oil and won't leave, is taking Syrian oil and won't leave. So essentially, the U.S. has used ISIS to fight against all of the Shiites on the theory that the Shiite Islam is all controlled by Iran, and if they want to essentially wipe out the Shiites as they're doing in Gaza, even though I think most of the Palestinians are mainly Sunni, but you should think of the ISIS as America's foreign legion. They've hired them. They pay them, and they recruit from them. You've just seen what happened in Russia from the Ukrainians, Oregon recruited Sunni terrorists from Tajikistan. You've seen the United States trying to use ISIS to recruit to fight in Russia's southern periphery. In Central Asia, and to fight in the Uyghur territories of Xinjiang in Western China. They're using ISIS to try to essentially attack the integrity of China, Russia, and Syria, and any other area where the United States wants a regime change to put in the usual client oligarchy.
So interesting. And they sell it under the description that this is the enemy and terrorist, and they are funding it. And public is still buying this, Professor Hudson. How is this possible?
Wait, repeat the
That the public
is hypocritical. Everybody throughout the world is appalled by the cruelty and the barbarism of ISIS. The United States is not going to come right out and say, hey, that's us that they're fighting. You know, we're directing ISIS from the presidential office. We love ISIS. Well, Biden loves ISIS, and Blinken loves ISIS, and the entire neocons, the CIA loves ISIS because they're all running it, but they can't say it to the American public. They have to pretend, just like they're pretending with Netanyahu, that, oh my heavens, look at ISIS is doing. We've really got to fight against it. And for instance, when it put in the white helmets in ISIS, these were the American supplied public relations unit. To essentially do false propaganda, false images, make false flag attacks. All of these false flag attacks, all of the white helmets and the propaganda has all been coordinated by the United States.
I want to ask you now a question that to some extent you actually answered already. Does Israel make any independent decisions that are not consulted with the United States in regards to bombing Gaza?
Well, the question is, what is the United States, or what do you mean by the United States? They don't need official approval. There's already a broad agreement in principle. Do whatever you have to do. The United States has given them a free hand, saying, you know, we're not going to interfere. You're our managers on site, just as you're managing ISIS, you know, you can manage certainly your own country. The U.S. has given blanket approval for Israel's genocide. That's why it says there's no genocide there. And it shares the aim of extending the war to fight Iran. Again and again, what Netanyahu is saying, we're not going to be safe until we defeat Iran. Well, the United States that's America, that's the neocon plan outlined in the 1990s it was spelled out, I think, by General Petraeus of first Afghanistan, then Iraq, then Syria, and then Iran. All of this was worked out from the beginning. The United States is trying to figure out, how do we do it? Well, there's a general expectation that one way to do it is to have Israel mount a false flag attack, something Iran does that is so bad that Israel retaliates, and then as it just bombed the Iranian embassy in Syria, that Iran is going to then do something to the United to Israel, and the United States will come to protect our Israeli brothers and world peace, and prevent the genocide that the Gazians are trying to do against Israel, and that Iran is trying to do against the rest of the world, and bomb Iran. Back in 1970s, there were discussions of, what do you do? What will Iran do to fight back? Well, there's one thing that Iran can do, that it doesn't have to bomb American troops in Syria or Iraq. It doesn't have to bomb Israel. All it has to do is sink a ship in the Strait of Hormuz. That's the big strait. You've seen what happened, what the Houthis have done with the Red Sea. The big traffic is the Strait of Hormuz. That's where Saudi Arabian oil we could call it the oil gulf. It's called the Persian Gulf, but it's really the oil gulf. That's where all the oil trade is. If you sink a ship or two in the oil gulf, that's going to push oil prices way, way up, because that's going to cut most of the world off for as long as Iran wants from the Near East, Middle Eastern oil supply. Well, that's what really terrifies Biden, because he's pretending that there's no inflation in the United States and that the economy is quite heavy. The inflation that would follow from Iran sinking a ship in Hormuz will essentially be crowning the American opposition to Biden, which is growing. It's one thing to be against genocide and killing people, but much more important is, if your gas prices go up, the American people think that that's really much more important than the fact of genocide and crimes against humanity. So that's really what is frightening the U.S. And the question is, right now, how do they make the Israeli provocation against Iran an excuse for the United States to come in with NATO, all of NATO's and European support, and somehow prevent Iran from having the power to close down the Straits of Hormuz? That's what they're trying to figure out now. And I don't know what they're going to do, but when Blinken has said, no, Israel has not broken any rules, it's all okay. What the United States really is, if they can get away with this, they can say there are really no rules at all for the whole world. We can do whatever we want. So right now is coming to a peak, and it's the follow-up that was all sort of thought in advance of the whole Israeli movement against Gaza.
Thank you, Professor Hudson. Next question, that is about targeting civilians, journalists, and workers. And again, you've addressed this already, but I will ask you this. Why Israeli's army is targeting all those groups?
Well, it's targeting everyone. It's targeting all civilians because it wants a land without Palestinian people. So it's targeting the most critical people necessary for a Gazian society to survive. It targets the journalists because it doesn't want the world to see what it's doing, because Israel has already lost its standing in the world. And the United States tells them, especially, you've got to kill the journalists, because if you don't kill them, the Biden administration are going to look bad. And we already have the Americans turning against the war. And, you know, there's only one anti-war candidate running in the presidential elections for this November. That's Jill Stein. Every other candidate is completely backing Israel in the war. But the American people, the majority of Americans, look at what's happening in Israel is genocide and as a crime against humanity. They're not going to vote for Biden. Biden is going to lose the election, or certainly not win it. It may go into the House of Representatives if nobody wins it. So you, in order to drive the rest of the Agazian populations out, you have to, number one, get rid of the journalists. Number two, you want to get rid of the hospitals. So as you're bombing the people, a lot of them are going to get injured. You want the bombs you want all the injured people from the bombs to die. For that, you have to bomb the hospitals. You especially have to target the doctors for killing, because not only will there not be doctors to heal the wounded people, but other doctors, Doctors Without Borders and from other countries, will be afraid to go into Gaza, because if you go there, you know that if you're a food worker bringing aid, or a doctor, or an aid worker, you're going to get shot because you're at the top of the target list.
It's horrible. It's just listening to this, you know, it's very hard.
Well, imagine how I used to feel sitting in meetings, and all of this was just said as if this is part of a game and this is how we're planning it all out. All of this was what was discussed. How do we do evil? I mean,
those are not humans to me. They are not humans to me.
That's right.
Soulless beings that are not humans. That's all I say here. Professor Hudson, next question is about those Israeli developers who, as you said in your email, are already planning to turn Gaza into luxury beachfront properties. So what do you really know about this? They are already planning this? Like, they have plans for
those? The Americans made a start. They began by building docks. You not only want beachfront property, you want docks for the buyers to have a place to tie up their yachts or their sailboats. Excuse me. And so the United States is building these piers. One reason it's doing it is it can pretend that it can say, we're not building the piers for Israeli property owners to have yachts. We're going to deliver food. But by the time we finish building the piers, there'll be no more Gazans. I mean, that's the whole point. By building the piers, they've enabled Israel to prevent the food trucks from coming in from the south. So building the piers is a means of pretending to help without doing anything at all to help actually develop food to Israel. So yes, they're all throughout the news, there have been statements by the Israeli real estate companies saying Gaza could have been a nice place to live if there weren't Arabs in it. And now if we can clear the land of Arabs, make it a land without those people, this is a wonderful property, and it has natural gas to help the Israeli balance of payments. So the whole idea is to make this a center of Israel luxury development.
Again, absolutely disgusting to me, just listening to this. I want to ask you now about, will Gaza cease to exist completely, and what will happen to all the Palestinians who survived?
Well, the land is going to be there, and it'll be beachfront property. Alistair Crook has been, I think, the clearest writer. He was one of the negotiators of between Israel and the Palestinians. He's explained that there cannot be a two-state solution anymore. The Israelis say, we are going to kill all of the Palestinians. The Palestinians say, well, we can't exist with the Israelis and we have to defend ourselves. If we don't kill them, they're going to kill us. So Israel has to be either Palestinian or Israeli. It can't be both. That is ended forever. So anyone who talks of a two-state solution, they're just not looking it up. So the question is, how is Gaza going to exist? Either it's going to be all Israeli and the Gazians will be forced to flee. The Israelis want them to flee by boats and to be sunk in the, most of them will be sunk in the Mediterranean, just like after America and France destroyed Libya. The Libyans fleeing tried to flee in boats and they were sunk. So either they will drown or they will somehow work their way into a prison camp that Egypt and its leader is setting up for Gazian refugees. And then the Gazians will somehow try to gain entry into Europe or other countries. So you can expect a huge influx of Gazians into Europe. Some people have suggested, well, now that Ukraine is turning into a land without a people, maybe either the Gazaans, who can turn Ukraine over to the Palestinians, or we could give it to the Israelis, saying, well, this is your ancestral land, where this is where all of the pogroms that started Zionism began. Now you can go back and there are no more Ukrainians to have pogroms against you. Maybe the Israelis should go to Ukraine. One population or the other has to emigrate. Well, Israelis already been losing a huge chunk of their population, especially their working age population, especially those who have jobs in information technology or highly paying jobs. So you're already seeing a population outflow. Gaza will exist geographically, but we have no idea about what is going to be the demographic composition. And I think Israeli Defense Forces chief, Herzi Halevi, said just last Sunday that he announced Israel knows how to handle Iran just as they're handling Gaza, that they prepared for this, they have good defensive systems, and he said, we are operating and cooperating with the USA and strategic problems partners in this region. So the U.S. is going to be putting pressure on Egypt to expand the concentration camps that it's setting up and to pressure the Europeans. Maybe so many Germans are leaving their country now that there's no more work for them. Palestinians will go to Germany and other European countries, and wherever they can find some kind of refuge. America was willing to give the Jewish population refuge as long as the Jewish population served European imperialist aims of controlling the Near Eastern oil. But what can Palestine offer to be protected? If the Palestinians don't have anything to offer the Europeans or the Americans, their governments simply do not care. They've done absolutely nothing to protect the Palestinians because they don't care if there's no money in it for them. And the Arab countries with money, the Saudi Arabians, the United Arab Republics, have not really lifted a hand to help this. Even though a large labor force in Saudi Arabia is already Palestinian, they don't need more Palestinians there. So that's basically what's happening.
Thank you, Professor Hudson. You know, before I ask you my last question, you know, people believe that the governments care about them. This is the most... I don't understand how people can still believe that any government really cares about them in the world. looking at the situation like this. It's heartbreaking. Just listening to what you said is a lot for me to take in. The last question is, when the bombing will stop and who is going to rebuild Gaza Strip?
Well, the bombing will stop when there are no more Palestinians to bomb. Israel doesn't have the money to rebuild it or the intention of rebuilding it. And even if Israel wants to rebuild it with nice homes all the way to the beachfront, who is going to do the building? Well, already Israel's made a deal with India to get a lot of Indian construction workers from the poorest provinces of India coming over there. But again, who's going to pay them? You can give them work permits, but the answer is who will pay them will be the contractors who are given the contracts to rebuild homes, rebuild homes and offices and the new Israeli compound in Gaza, unless the world works and says no, the Israelis have to give back all the land, and it's Israel that'll be a minority under a Palestinian government. You cannot have an Israeli government that is over the whole region, because its policy is to kill the Palestinians. So I don't see that, again, you can't have a two-state solution. It doesn't look like anyone's supporting the Palestinians right now. Who would help rebuild it? Well, the Turkish builders might come in and build it. Other Middle Easterners would rebuild it. Saudi Arabia could finance huge developments there. The United Arab Republics could buy land. American investors, maybe Blackstone could help develop there, but it'll be foreign investment. And if you look at the fact that the foreign investors of all these countries are looking for what they can get out of the genocide against Palestinians, you realize why there's no real opposition to the genocide that's taking place. And the great benefit to the U.S. of all this is that as a result of this absence of any kind of the moral feeling that you've just expressed, no claims can be brought against the United States for any of the warfare, any of the regime change interference that it's planning for Iran, China, Russia, and as it's been doing in Africa and Latin America. So Israel and Gaza and the West Bank should be seen, I think, as an opening of the new Cold War. And whatever you see happening in Gaza after the Gazans are driven out, you see this is really the plan for what the United States wants to do in China, in Russia, in Africa, in the whole rest of the world. You're seeing a plan for basically how to financialize and make money out of genocide and the destruction of society. And in order to do that, you have to prevent anything like the United Nations of having any authority at all. And the irony in all this is that the United States is creating just the opposite of what it wanted to do. I mean, obviously, while this is happening in Gaza, most of the global majority that we've spoken before, the world outside of NATO, America and Europe, are appalled. And the only way of stopping what's happening in Gaza happening in the rest of the world is to create an alternative to the United Nations, an alternative to the World Bank, to the IMF, an alternative to all the organizations that the United States has controlled to turn the whole rest of the world into Gaza, if it can.
Dr. Hudson, Professor Hudson, I want to thank you for coming back. I want to thank you for telling me after our last live stream to address this, because you shared with me and with the audience. And I really hope that you will spread this video, guys. You will share it. So I personally believe that we are fighting evil. And the way that I feel I am in a small way contributing to this is to trying to seek the truth and bring people who have knowledge and understanding and can share the facts and the truth with the world. Because you don't, if you don't know what you're fighting against, what you're fighting with, then you're like Don Quixote. You have to know what is the problem. And I am immensely grateful for guests like yourself to be on my channel and to share your knowledge with the audience. I can only imagine, knowing all of this, what you shared with us today, living with this for so many years and watching the unfoldment of those events in the world. For someone who has feelings and emotions, it's very hard to bear. I can only imagine. So thank you for your contribution.
So well, that's why I'm on your show, Anya, because yeah, you see that this is evil, and it is evil.
Yes, thank you so much. I know you have to go, and I want to invite you again, of course, in the near future. Hopefully you find time for our next conversation. To everyone who's watching, make sure to check all the links to Professor Hudson that are already attached down below this live stream. And like I said, please share the video, hit this like, it's free of charge, and it helps the channel also, and more people can hear this information in the world. Thank you, everyone, and until next time.